If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where our guest today is Chris Lawrence, organiser of the Newark Town Centre races and Dudley Grand Prix, and a member of British Cycling's Elite Road Racing Task Force. Chris, thank you very much indeed for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for the invite, Tim.
Now, race organisation is absolutely at the heart of this puzzle that we call elite British road racing. How did you get involved? It's not an easy job.
So, kind of by accident, it has to be said. So, I'd had in my professional career some experience with running charity events for walking. So, I raised about £150,000 for cancer research once upon a time by doing, you know, event management, did the Yorkshire Three Peaks. Had, you know, I was responsible for 100 people, their welfare of varying kind of activity levels and what have you. So it came at a time where I was without a club, but my friend was with Barnsley Road Club. And I got kind of navigated to a person with influence called Gary Barnes. And Gary was trying to facilitate an event organiser for their time trial, which happened to be on the A1 at Ranby in Nottinghamshire. And I said, well, I'll do my best and kind of give it a go. Well, we got to the day and it got rained off. So a couple of days before, I said, look, the forecast is going to be torrential. We'll stop the event. The district didn't kind of like that, but there we are. In the September, we ran it properly and it was lauded as one of the best events that the time trial guys been to with the information that we provided as a manual. And then we got to the third event, so this is year two, and we set 11 riders off, and we had to cancel it because of torrential rain. So I said, gathered the guys in the village hall and said, I want more control of this. I don't want people going off into the Never Never Up, you know, somewhere that I've got no control. I'd like us to get to deliver British cycling events instead. So we did the Barnsley races at Haydedge, which was our regional B. Club was fearful of kind of transformation and going down that route because they thought what came with it was club in peril, loads of debt. And if it's any race is effectively managed, it should never have that circumstance. We went from there to running a National B the next year with a Regional B before it, so a double header. The likes of Connor Swift in his days at Cycling Sheffield and Ryan Perry and one or two others of note. I think Harry Tanfield was in that field as well. And then the rest is kind of pulled by the way of getting in touch and working with councils. Barnsley Town Centre races came about. The Barnsley not in the Town Centre races came about, and that was another remarkable day. And then life changed, moved to Newark. Kept on with Barnsley in 2022, and then Newark's had 2 years. We got Dudley, and Generation Pro has got many other strings to its bow to come, fingers crossed.
Well, that's an impressive organisational palmarès, Chris. Is there anything in your professional background that's given you an aptitude for organising people and events?
So by profession, I work in contract management, supplier relationship management. So I've always been in, or primarily throughout my career, dealing with facilities management. So you've got to have those people skills, those networking ability, consultation, commercial acumen to kind of dabble in that. But, you know, just because you haven't isn't a barrier for you to be an organiser. You know, we've tackled some of those obvious things. The bit that I kind of didn't tackle in the first bit was around engaging with the governance systems and the regional boards and the regional work groups within Yorkshire when I used to live in Yorkshire and then subsequently in East Midlands, but never losing the link between the different boards and the different operating. So we share best practice, but having that network of people is just a huge enabler. And, you know, can only encourage people to do that. You know, and try that journey because it works.
And being a people person and having those people skills sounds like a pretty valuable arrow in the race organizer's quiver.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. But yeah, you've got to know where you kind of go in as well, and try and have a focus on that, and try and navigate those challenges as and when they come. And yeah, you dealing with people, you know, has its kind of fluid nature, and you got to try and work that as much as you can, all in positive spirit. But you know, at times it's a challenge. But yeah, you can overcome some of that easy for sure.
What took you from organising charity walking events into cycling, Chris? Where does cycling fit into your personal background?
Okay, so the bike was my way out. So without kind of getting the tissues out, about 7 or 8, my mum and dad split up. I used to live in the south, and we went into the north. My mum took me, and I always had a bike, and I was out of the whole latchkey kid kind of era, you know. 8 or 9, I was taking myself off to school. It'd be absolutely unheard of or unthinkable these days for that to happen. I would be, you know, to be fair, my mum had no idea where I was from 1 minute to the next, because I'd just taken myself off. Great life experiences, great challenges that you kind of do. And it's the whole kid of the 80s knows everything. Well, they don't know everything, but they've probably got a fair idea. So cycling was my kind of way in to enjoyment. It really kind of started around about 12 or 13, probably, where high school had taken on. There was groups of kids on the weekend doing bike rides in. I was born in Ossett. I wasn't born in Ossett. I lived in Ossett, which incidentally is where Colin Sturgis was originally from. We all know kind of those areas, and we used to go into the woods and mountain bike off over to Home Firth, and then did some racing at about 14, which it doesn't really want to be reflected on at all. And then kind of lost a little bit of it by getting to sort of 16, 17, getting distracted by going to pubs and clubs, and that lasted maybe 3 or 4 years. And then about 23, bought my first road bike. There was a group of us that used to go off, and we went off to France and Belgium and all sorts of stuff to do mostly sportives. And then as it got to 26, 27, I was a late entrance into racing. So I joined Featherstone Road Club by that point. We were doing time trials up and down the A1 on a winter's night, you know, the old Great North Road. And as I kind of found a place on that, you know, my career took off a little bit. You know, I was down to London. The whole balance of work life had just gone out the window. So, you know, the opportunity to race was limited and less successful as father time clicked over. So it got to about, oh God, what was it, 36, 37? And the whole piece about the race organising, the time trial, clicked in. So cycling was always in me. You know, I've got memories really of Chris Boardman winning in Barcelona in 92. You know, having posters on the wall of mountain bike stars from the era, David Baker, Tim Gould, Jason McCroy was the big one, you know, of downhill fame. So that was always there, without a doubt. But, you know, it just then took its own course from about 24, 25, where the obsession kicked in and hasn't gone.
The reason I asked, Chris, is I wanted to know, is it possible to be a race organiser without having spent time on the other side of the barriers?
Clearly it helps, but it's not a barrier to entry. I mean, we've got plenty of organisers that are out there that have come by way of their family, their young, you know, young children or something, getting into the sport and being attracted to it, and then think, well, actually, this is really good. You know, we've got plenty of people that have been into football for their lives, or rugby or cricket, never really thought that cycling was a thing for them. So, no, and to be fair, the easier that we make the sport to undertake. So we talked about best practice playbooks and a lot of enabling subjects in the task force. You know, that there shouldn't be a barrier. I mean, we've looked at, and to coin a phrase, stuff that's the wrong side of the paywall, you know, that we've got information out there, but it's just kept so people can't be tempted in by some of those obvious things. So absolutely not. And, you know, it certainly is a strength if you come with kind of experience of managing people and being around people. You know, if you've got some part of that in your character, then, you know, they're only things that, you know, are tools there that you can utilize.
Well, it's good to know that it's not essential to have been chewing the handlebars for many years before you can put on a bike race. Now, you're best known, Chris, for the Newark Town Centre races, which I think I'm right in saying is a comparatively new event. I know that Otley and Ilkley, for example, go a long way back. You mentioned that a life change took you to Newark. When did you first put on the Town Centre races?
So its first year was 2022, but I'd already spoken to Newark and Sherwood District Council in 2020, but for obvious reasons, COVID took away the opportunity for that year and 21. You know, kind of big props to the councils that advocate cycling, of which NSDC are one, and they've continued to support, and hopefully we'll get the event for years to come, because it is a really attractive race. It hasn't got a big field, but actually that then brings the best of the best to the table. And we've seen some excellent racing. Jake Scott, Emma Jeffers year one, Alex Briggs and Robin Clay year two, and then hopefully we'll get through a fair few more. Plus there's loads of youth racing. You know, Generation Pro has its mantra of inspiring the next generation. So we will always stand by delivering youth racing, because that's our future.
Well, it seems a particularly photogenic race. We've got tons of pictures from Larry at Velo UK, a website that Brother sponsors. Did you see that market square and think, I could put on a bike race here? Or were you determined to put on a bike race wherever life had taken you?
No, it was like light bulb moment. Me and my partner were walking across the market square, going off to Wilkinson's to buy a dustpan and brush and all the sort of attributes you need to kind of kick on. And I just walked over and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And she says, "What for?" I says, "Well, it's an itch I've got to scratch, I'm afraid." And of course, with COVID, it wouldn't have given anybody an insight into kind of the way I delve into delivering an event. You know, there is time that you need to dedicate for it. And clearly, it can be quite absorbing. You know, you have to travel off to different places to go and suss out routes or do risk assessments. You know, but all those things, once you get the foundation of anything done in a kind of methodical, thorough approach, you reap the benefit. And like you say, we've got, you know, such good support from the council, such a aesthetically attractive event that, you know, we're reaping the rewards of that kind of hard work from the first year, which, you know, is just the way it has to kind of work. Well, it's my way of working, and I hope to continue and be successful across it, all other events I'm involved with.
How long did it take, Chris, from that initial light bulb moment to staging the first edition? I mean, are we talking months, up to a year?
Well, the good news is that I've got a spectrum of examples that are from 2 years to 10 weeks. So with Barnsley Town Centre races, when we started the process of that, the race I talked about where Connor Hood's race was in the May, and I reached into Barnsley Council and said, look, you know, Barnsley Town Centre races held the champs in 2015. The organiser of the time had, you know, had kind of either got distracted with other stuff, but had no kind of preciousness about somebody else taking it on, and particularly with, you know, with the support to back us as well, which was fantastic. And reaching into the council, you know, we sort of said in August to September, you know, we'd like to kind of get it on. Anyway, they didn't come back to us until March with a phone call, which said, oh, do you remember that call? You know, and you're scratching your head to think about what on earth you said on it, because there'd been a number of subjects. Well, we'd like you to know that we've got the support for Barnsley. You know, can we run it in September? So with the view that we were going to try and do it to the standard of the national series, it seemed absolutely ridiculous to do it any other time than in a July. So that gave us April, May, June. So in 10 weeks as a new blood organizer for that scale of event with a team that were in the same place, but we landed it with aplomb. And then in the year after, which was 2018, you know, we were adamant that we should be part of the National Circuit Series, and we were. Dudley, the same. You know, we had been contacted by the local BC team to work with the council and local volunteer cohort. And again, you know, used all those kind of examples from the learnings of Newark and Barnsley. So, yeah, it can be done. It certainly can be done. And so long as you've kind of got the plans and you can reach out to get network support from the guys in BC, you can get the whole kind of skeleton of what you need to help support. You know, Newark is probably the other side of the spectrum, but by circumstance, had COVID not have got in the way, we could have probably been talking that, you know, I wrote to them in March or April 2020. Who's to say that that wouldn't have been part of the calendar, which we had a provisional date, we could have got done and it could have been there, but it did take sort of a year and a half because of the circumstance. But yeah, more time the better. But, you know, it's something that you can do.
What's the most important relationship, Chris? You've mentioned the councils in a couple of different contexts, both in Barnsley and Newark. Newark, I'd guess, looking at that market square, there's a chamber of trade and businesses to get on side. Police, perhaps not quite so much an issue in a circuit race as a road race. But of all those different pieces of the jigsaw, of all those different relationships, what would you say is the most important to manage?
There's any number. It has to be said. So councils can come in all shapes and sizes, and Newark is probably on the extreme of that. You've got a funder who is Newark Sherwood District Council. You've got the highways, which is governed by Nottinghamshire County Council with a subcontracting organisation in between. And then you've got a piece of land, which is where the finish line is, which is the market, the Royal Market Square, which is managed by Newark Town Council. So you've got a whole range of authority stakeholders. You've also got the A46, which means that you've got National Highways. You've always got a safety advisory group. So you've always got environmental health, the police, blue light partners, the transport operators. You know, there's kind of how those engagements take place that's important. The two bits that always give a load of energy and time towards our volunteers and, you know, people that want to make the event a success. And the guys from British Cycling to enable me to help shape and pull on different resource options, you know, with technical expertise to help and make sure that we have the best event. You know, so making sure relationships are sound. You know, everybody's got a plan, everybody has sight of the plan, everybody knows their role in the day or, you know, in advance of the day. It's the old adage of, you know, you fail to prepare, you can prepare to fail. So you may as well do your absolute utmost to make sure that everything's in order so that you can make the best of the opportunity, which, you know, we certainly try that.
So it's not as simple as getting a particular individual to give you the green light. There are a lot of people involved to make the event a success.
Yeah, combined councils are definitely easier because everything's under one roof. And certainly, but that's not to say it's, you know, difficult. You just have to make sure you're aware of all the components into it. But it is more than just having, you know, a contact with the cash. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, I've never been to the race, but I've seen scores and scores of Larry's pictures. It looks like a wonderful night out. How many people do you get into that square? How many people turn up for the race?
Yeah, so we certainly saw growth this last year in 2023. So we think we're in around about 2,000 people in and around the circuit. And certainly the pictures from the finishing kind of the men's race are just tremendous. You know, they show the passion. They show all the good things that circuit events like Newark Town Centre should have, you know, people getting excited, seeing the thrill of the event and the anticipation of someone's success, you know, in that case. And the images that we saw this year, Robin and Alec Briggs, you know, just are all the good things. Young people, great with social media, great with exposure, and just maximising four-hour sport, everything that's good. So,
well, we've used that picture of Robin a couple of times on our social channels. She's on the team that we're sponsoring this year, DAS Hutchinson Brother UK. Larry's got a frame-by-frame of her crossing the finish line, and the change in her expression from amazement to exultation, wonderful to see. What's the standing of the event in the town, Chris? Are people now counting down the days to the next one? Does it draw people in from different communities? Is it popular with local businesses? I know that in Otley, it's almost the highlight of the entire year. Are you getting somewhere close in Newark?
The reality is that as an organiser, you face pressures to deal with ensuring that the race has good standing or is well regarded through a number of kind of ways. Sure, that there is always going to be the how does your race fit with the businesses that are there, you know, and Otley's blessed with a lot of leisure businesses in and around the circuit, pubs, fish and chip shops, takeaways, restaurants, Ilkley the same, you know, great kind of layup for outside eating all the way down the high street, and it all fits. You know, we have some challenges because it is in a close-knit town. Barnsley was the same. Is the event going to naturally marry with the sofa and the carpet shop? Probably, you know, less likely, but, you know, we do a lot of community engagement to try and ensure that there's the opportunity for businesses to engage in the event, get publicity, get exposure. We have, you know, great media, great social sites, banner options. You know, we have a commentator talking about sponsors and interested parties all night long. So we give a range of different options, plus hospitality, that people can come and talk to dignitaries of the council and try and influence how their life goes and get people interested in their brands, property, services and all the rest of it. Will we please everyone? You can't make an omelette without cracking eggs, can you? So the answer to that is that you've got to just roll with the punches at times. Is it felt like it's beneficial? Yeah, absolutely. We do a lot of analysis post-event to say how much exposure the town got. And we've seen, you know, through people that I've seen on my social media that don't really ever, you know, or on the face of it, don't appear to have any connection to Newark, turn up and just, you know, take a picture of the market square or the moon, which, you know, you can't lose sight of the fact that that's actually bringing footfall and spending money and generating interest in the local community, which, you know, the net residual benefit to Newark by the event has a reality. You know, people for 5 hours during a July night might get frustrated, but actually it's the unseen net benefit that comes over the period of a longer period that we've got to kind of try and maximise. It's difficult, but, you know, we've got honing on it.
And more broadly, does it inspire the residents? Difficult to measure, I'd guess.
Having a carnival atmosphere, which we try and engender, certainly at Newark especially, because of how it's configured, you know, brings people to an attractive event. You know, the imagery of people, you know, having enjoyment, you know, an offering to attract them that's more broader than just the cycling event, you know, that can get kind of the leisure sector triggered as well, is a good thing. Certainly in Newark, there's a backstory of running championships, Tour of Britain, that's been there, and the people come out and really like it. I mean, interestingly, there's part of the course, you know, as we're kind of going around making sure that everything's working as it is, you know, there's doorways that then people are out on the street with deck chairs. And we were stopped by a family and said, you wouldn't mind doing this every night, would you? I said, well, yeah, okay. And she says, no, it's been brilliant. No cars, no noise, no one getting angry, you know, and having road rage. You know, we've got young people celebrating a sport, and it's fantastic. We're sat here just having a bottle of wine and watching the racing, it couldn't be any better. So, you know, if those little things are just there, then, you know, it inspires everybody. And, you know, the crowds of Newark speak for itself, really. You know, they come far and wide, but they are en masse from Newark. So it's well, certainly well regarded in the town.
Well, let's move 80 miles down the road to Dudley. What took you there, Chris? Is it a Trojan horse into Birmingham? One of the recommendations from the Elite Road Racing Task Force is to engage bigger cities with more diverse communities. Does Dudley open a doorway to that?
Yeah, I think it does. So the root of how we got to Dudley was that Generation Pro Cycle Events was created to enable councils to engage with a provider that does kind of an end-to-end service. So full event management, full procurement, delivery on the day, all the sporting stuff, all the technical stuff with the kind of experience I've picked up and my network of suppliers and people that, you know, we bring into the events to help shape it. Clearly, when you run an event as successful as Newark, kind of the opportunity is obvious that you can help other councils and maybe, you know, grow the sport by growing the business. So that's one thing. So, you know, I sort of viewed an ambition to do that. A couple of people had watched Commonwealth Games and came away with the view that, A, it was fantastic because in the West Midlands, they have very few major events. We know that there's a disparity between events above a certain line in the country. Probably Melton is kind of the South Point generally for the national stuff. So, you know, kind of having major championships land on their door, they came away and said, this has got to happen. We've got to keep going with this. So they reached the local council and engaged with British Cycling in the West Midlands region, who by hook or by crook were referred to myself to consider the running of Dudley Grand Prix, give them the whole mechanical kind of proposal that enabled them to go to the council, for the council to then engage in itself and its sanctioning processes to release a budget line for it, which we did. And again, this is in the period of about 10-15 weeks. So we knew where we were going to head to and we had a tight timetable. So this was, you know, working with the BC teams, working with combined council, working with the volunteer group that were mainly built up from Stourbridge Cycling Club, Hales Owen, Wolverhampton Wheelers, all of the clubs in that kind of locality. So hit the ground running. Highways were really supportive. They gave us a course that we could run on that was sustainable. That's important, you know, relationships to kind of help enable that those thoughts, because now the town's been turned into redevelopment, the bus stations shut down and dispersed elsewhere, there's a tram line. So, you know, all these kind of discussions were held to shape up a circuit. And in actual fact, I think that the riders loved the circuit, with probably a little bit of a caveat in that there was one corner that had a bit of diesel oil spillage on it and was a bit of a slip and slide, which, you know, some riders came off worse than others. But, you know, largely speaking, it gave something different to the series, which is no bad thing, you know. It did rain, though. It definitely rained. So
your ability, Chris, to effectively walk into another town and deliver another successful race, was that the genesis of this task force recommendation for a winning patterns playbook? I mean, if you know how to approach local authorities, chambers of trade, whoever it might be, and you understand the sporting technicalities of putting together a circuit, should it be possible to deploy a standard approach and bring bike races to towns and cities across the country?
The important thing is it's one way to do it. The thing to remember is about people, you know, can be creative. There's a number of different ways. If there's a low kind of cost to stuff, then, you know, sponsorship is always there. Some of our bigger races are entirely driven by sponsorship. But where you're going into a brand new environment, you know, where you're trying to put a marker down as to knowing exactly what the cost of an event is, then a way to do it is to get council funding. A, they become invested in the event, so all the mechanics can be unrolled to enable the stuff like communication, marketing, access to the schools, highways, transport services, local police. You know, in Dudley, they've got a council-run restaurant, which lends itself to your hospitality offering. You know, the list goes on. But, you know, that is one way to do it. Another way to do it is, as I say, to do, you know, full sponsorship and generate income to the event locally, which, you know, has been kind of the mainstay for events such as Ilkley and Otley to do that, which is good. But the other thing with going around the country and being kind of a moving circus is that we're able to deliver back into the sport the experience, share expertise, take people on a journey, and then organically grow capability and confidence to do things that people may have been slightly wary of. Or example of my own, you know, experiences was that, you know, the club just needed assurance that it wasn't going to be kind of on the hook for a load of money where it doesn't need to be. You know, we've got a model that kind of, you know, satisfies any kind of risk around that. And the more people become familiar with talking to their authority leaders, talking around how they can look at different funding sources that isn't necessarily part of, you know, the council.plc aligned. It could be a sustainable transport fund, or it could be a health and wellbeing initiative that comes out of different pockets of governmental funding that's not just out the council. So there's a lot of things that's in there. Will a playbook help? Absolutely. It will also drive us to test British Cycling with ensuring that we have considered clear and consistent practices and approaches that allows, you know, ease of access to certain things. And if we take policing as a flavour of the month, you know, from the articles that were out post Tour of Britain and moving forward into other stuff that's happened more recently, you know, ensuring that we've got a template to follow that is consistent, it's reasonable, rationally thought out, and cost effective, then we've got somewhere to go. I don't think at the moment it's fair to say we've got all those things dialed in, hence why we came out with that recommendation in the task force. So, you know, we certainly need those things to make sure that we give the next wave of organisers that want to get into the big stuff and take what they've already got and just allow enablement of that, because without it, I think there's going to be some further challenge down the road.
Well, you've given me a nice lead, Chris, into your event organisers workshop when you talk about your willingness to share expertise and capability. Now, this is a seminar for anybody who hasn't seen it yet on YouTube. And for listeners, I can't recommend highly enough giving an hour and a bit of your time to this, because even as a journalist, I found it a huge eye-opener, the level of detail required just to put on a well-organized bike race. Certainly for anyone contemplating putting on a race of their own, I'd say this is essential viewing. It covers everything from the availability of signage and accredited marshals and commissaires to remembering to turn off the auto-braking system on your car if it's a vehicle in the race convoy. Chris, what would you say are the areas most commonly overlooked by new organisers?
So I think cycle sports kind of got itself into a halcyon era kind of phenomenon, where we think that, you know, 15 years ago the entry fee was £15. Well, the sad fact of the matter is that the cost of living and inflationary increases have taken the cost of delivering almost every event and lifted it up to a place where, as an organizer, we've got to have an eye on sustainability at all levels, whether that be purpose-built facilities, whether that be the national regional bees, or whatever else. We just must have a view to try and look at all the costs that we would like associated with the event and reverse engineer that and look at things like sponsorship, even for something out in the, you know, in the sticks. You know, the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker might chime in with 50 quid. And, you know, as soon you might have a few 50 quids, and before long you've got a little bit of money that helps you work that up for, you know, a little bit of publicity, a little bit of social media spin on the local shop of or service or provider. And I suppose it's always asking your friends, you know, on your social media if they would like to partake in any sponsorship. I mean, we talk about the workshop itself. It's fair to say that There is a lot of helpful material on just about everything in the sport, but probably lacking is to be an event organiser. So we were conscious that our next phase was to support that in terms of demystifying the process. I myself, as an organiser for BC, are a product of event organising workshops delivered in Yorkshire by Bob Howden and Mark Etchers and Peter Sutton and people like that. So, you know, to move to the East Midlands to deliver, you know, in the region, face-to-face workshops, and then to do this, you know, I think is the right place to go. And what we've also done is look towards the governance systems in BC to encourage that all the regions around the country do exactly the same, so that they can nurture new organisers, give them the support networks, you know, try and encourage people to talk to one another, because it's not always you and your big club that does it. You know, the Yomp Bonk guys, you know, James Hawkins, Tom Hutchinson, Will, Eugene Cross, you know, are all people that call upon networks, as I do, you know, to come on board to support the sport and make stuff happen with relationship management and all the rest of it that makes stuff continue to roll. You know, they're definitely the things that are important, you know, learning the skills, having the people around you, making sure that, you know, you've got something that's financially secure and sustainable, and, you know, linking in with agencies and businesses to help that all along.
And how central to all of that, Chris, is the role of sport developer? Toby Turner was on your call, obviously a very capable guy. His passion for the sport really came across. One of the Elite Road Racing Task Force recommendations that struck home with me was for a wider geographical spread of races. And as somebody living on the south coast of England, I can only applaud that. How valuable is it to have an active sport developer in a region encouraging people to organise bike races, particularly in areas that might not have hosted the Tour de France or the World Championships in the last 10 years?
Yeah, critical, without a doubt. Anyone that wants to run anything beneath a national series race, and even within the national series race as well, it needs to engage with sport developers. They're the first port call, because they'll help you shape up, you know, your race, what type of event you're going to land. You know, they'll do testing questions to make sure you've got kind of a volunteer force. You know, you've got an idea of when it is that the race is to be run. But if you haven't got a circuit that is existing, inverted brackets kind of stuff, then they will give you at least their best guidance, professional guidance, as to whether a circuit that you might have crafted up is appropriate, so that, you know, you don't have any kind of issues, any pausing, halting of races, so that it makes a better event that you can build from and increase the sport, and give you all sorts of, you know, equipment advice. They can be the central hub of, you know, networks in and around the region. You know, the regional boards all have regional work groups that the sport developer helps work, so that if they don't know the answer immediately, they're probably within a phone call of getting the answer. You know, it's that kind of role. And Toby's great. You know, there's loads of them around the country that are all good. Tom Wilson and Matt Gott, you know, in various parts, Jack Reese and all the other guys that are there are all hugely passionate about cycle sport. You know, that's the important thing. Not any of them are in place because it's a job. You know, they're actually doing it because it's the pastime and their passion.
Well, let's move on now to talk about the Elite Road Racing Task Force. Of course, that's commanded a lot of headlines in our area of the sport. You were on the panel, chaired by Ed Clancy, a triple Olympic champion, of course, along with Phil Jones, Brother UK's managing director. So clearly a lot of strength in depth. But I guess you were able to provide the nuts and bolts of how to put on a race. How did your skill set integrate with those of the other panelists?
Yeah, so there was a mixture of us all on the Elite Task Force, and clearly from a background sense, I had a sighter on the event organisation piece. But, you know, comes with that the need for commercial skill sets, for, you know, managing the riders. So it actually worked really well in terms of, the knit together. You know, we certainly tested one another. We tested BC around the barriers that we see, we all see, and some of those kind of pressured points that we'd like to have got at, you know, whether brand new or legacy, you know, we've attacked them. So as well as kind of everything that's kind of known and obvious to all, I also have forums and networks with national event organisers outside the circuit races with, you know, Peter up at Beaumont, with Colin, with Roy up at Lancaster, with Austin down at Guildford, with Bob, you know. So if, you know, I don't know everything, you know, no one does. But, you know, what I tried to enable was that input to that task force was clear, structured, and where things were unknown, and I'll give you an example in a minute, and I reached out to a lot of people to make sure that what I was actually putting forward was, you know, fit for it. So one of the things that we obviously had to look at was the elite, and what does that kind of look like? You know, is it Tour of Britain, Women's Tour of Britain? Yeah, I think so. We can kind of agree on that. I think we certainly tackled the whole UCI piece and international racing outside of Tour of Britain. And certainly we needed a little bit of context setting around what that means. So, of course, in our national road series, we know what the kind of economies for those kind of events are, and we know them individually. You know, the organisers have freely provided that, which has contributed massively to those that aren't close to its understanding. And then courtesy of Colin Clues, who helped me a huge amount, you know, I got an insight onto the international bit. So, you know, where a national road series race has, you know, an economy, you know, we're a step ahead for what Colin does. And then a 1.1, I might be getting the reference points out of memory wrong, but, you know, if we were to look at a single day level of Tour of Britain, for instance, you know, what that would mean even further, and some of the dependencies and impacts of choosing those. So it helped us understand that it would have been folly to all cry out we need 10 UCI 1.1s or 1.2s, because the challenge needs to be staggered to achieve it. It would be unrealistic to sense that could just happen tomorrow. You know, if we were to kind of in the round say at least £80,000 to £90,000 for one of those UCI races, you know, and that's dependent on the venue. So, you know, it is a hell of a challenge, and it would be irresponsible for us to sort of dog whistle towards those kind of numbers, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, there is an overriding sense of realism from those 16 recommendations. I know that there were 40 action points in total, but 16 of them have been put before the public. Which of those 16, Chris, do you consider, from an organiser's perspective, to be the most valuable? I mean, succession planning, for example, that has a very practical feel to it. Centralised procurement, again, you can see how that would be of immediate value to a race organiser. I mean, there were 3 recommendations alone for the National Circuit Series, which I guess was your touch point into the process. Which of the 16 could you put your finger on and say, well, look, that's the one that I think could make a genuine difference?
Yeah, so I'm going to spin this one, as you might imagine. So to me, it was always 40, and it was split 3 ways. There was road, circuit, and there was stuff that covered the job lot, you know. So where the generic bits sit, you know, we've got the demystifying of what a race organiser is. And I was always clear to say that this wasn't about the elite. This was about ensuring that the pyramid has a solid base. So where we have grassroots, you know, I started off and have done many, many, many things on schoolyard circuits up at Wakefield or Forge Valley or Doncaster, you know, and learning the ability, but creating a playbook to allow us to understand what that all means, you know, and the skills. And we've done some of that obviously on the workshop to unravel some of those things and give everyone an ease of navigating into the topic. But certainly that's it. There are some critical issues that are definitely in the road piece, which is about consistent approaches around safety measures, whether that be appointing an EG, AMSs, policing. Those things aren't easy to overcome. And I know, thankfully, that BC are into dialogue around those really kind of heady issues. It's got to be overcome because that's an enablement to the sport. And without those, you know, critical things being at the foundation of it, again, it's the pyramid, the house of cards kind of analogy. We've got to, you know, try and make sure that we hold those 40 points to account. We've got to have some place where we understand what is being done on them. So I think that we've got governance systems inside the region. I know full well that they are being exercised to bring that to a place where we know what is the ambition to do to deliver those 40 points. And we know that the next phase is, when are we going to do it?
How confident are you, Chris, that British Cycling will deliver these recommendations? The CEO, John Dutton, he mentioned it as recently as the announcement about major events. There were five key bullet points at the centre of the press release that accompanied that conference, one concerning the women's tour and the Tour of Britain, another concerning putting on a multi-discipline urban event, for example. I mean, these are big flagship announcements, and in amongst it all was a pledge to deliver the recommendations of the Elite Road Racing Task Force. Are you confident that that will happen?
Yeah, you are right. They are very big statements, aren't they? So there will be, a measure against them. Now, you know, there would be hope that all of the recommendations have both been assessed. They've had plenty of time to kind of kick back on, you know, potential issues with the volunteers that participated in that task force, but they accepted the actual report. And therefore, that's the first marker, which says, yeah, we get where you're coming from. The second part is now, you know, we're going to do this and we're going to do it properly. And this is when we're going to do it. And we're going to hope to have delivered it by something that's realistic. You know, we were asked to deliver smart recommendations, and I think we've done that. So, we need further dialogue on points, because context to new audiences is always, you know, important, particularly if they're going to take us on to resolve some of this stuff. Has it been a case that we're saying stuff for the first time? I don't think we are in a number of cases, and that might give rise to a lot of people criticising it for being, you know, around the cycle again. But, you know, have we ever kind of had the CEO put, you know, all his money on the table? And hoping it, you know, we're hoping he sticks it all on red and we get it red, rather than it kind of going black and going off into the bank. So, but we are at a point that some of this stuff is really serious. You know, the policing, it's got to be front and centre of making sure that we transform and enable road racing to happen.
Let's finish up with a few rapid-fire questions, because I've taken up most of your afternoon already. What is the most challenging aspect to being a race organiser?
There is a lot of time constraint, obviously, on delivering events like this. The reward is, it comes in waves. It's just, you know, the atmosphere of the events, the engagement of the riders, the families, you know, when you've been kind of in and around youth racing and these big sort of flagship events and other stuff like Monsell Hill Climb and National Hill Climb, and when it's, you know, you kind of, you see people all the time. It is one big family, and these events are where everybody's there, you know. So that's the reward, and the time that goes into it is just a lead-in. You know, it's February now. There's a kind of, it's paper pushing time. You know, and you're doing deals with the councils, or you're trying to get buy-in from sponsors. You know, all that hard work is, you know, anticipation for those 4 weeks in July. Never mind this kind of 3 weeks in July and several thousand kilometres. I mean, we're doing that walking every night, to be fair. So, But the joy of those 4 weeks, yeah, is brilliant for those that are involved, and there's plenty of us.
Tell me, Chris, is this addictive? You organise 2 rounds of the National Circuit Series. You help out at the Sheffield Grand Prix too, I know. You've just mentioned the Monsell Hill Climb, and Mark Etches, of course, was one of your guests on the workshop.
It is addictive, yeah, because it's just, you know, usually Dudley put to one side, but Barnsley was kind of a little bit similar for those that were there. You know, it's usually gloriously warm, and sport is excellent. You know, the sort of the volunteer engagement, the kind of post-event stuff as well. You know, we kind of work hard and play hard. And especially as, you know, a lot of us have either come along with our friends for many years through racing or riding or event, you know, volunteering. You know, it's just one big family on it and a great big party for 4 weeks. That party involves a lot of hard work. You know, I could be up from 5 in the morning out on race day kind of stuff and not get back till the small hours. And that's, you know, just part of it. But, you know, the rewards are massive. There is also the end of season fall off the cliff moment, which usually is after Newark being the season finisher, the day after, I wake up in the morning and have that sense of relief that I just kind of have a little bit of a time on my own, shut the door and usually in floods of tears because it's, you know, it's usually been a great successful period of time, you know, and it's... you know, that's the reward. If I get to that point and it's happy crying, then happy days. But not doing that in public, though, just for the record.
Well, look, if anyone listening to this podcast or anyone who had watched Chris's workshop was umming and ahhing about whether to take that step and become a race organiser, well, you couldn't hope for a more inspiring statement than that. Chris, thanks very much indeed for your time today and very best of luck with all of your events in 2024.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for the opportunity and, yeah, all the best.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.